I'm Elena Hutchins Lyle.
And I'm Harvinder Vadva.
We're the hosts of Inappropriate Questions, and we're back with season 3.
With some fantastic guests, we break down questions like,
is asking where are you from appropriate small talk?
Is it okay to ask a coworker how much do you make?
Should you ask a polyamorous person, do you get jealous?
Inappropriate Questions season 3. Available now on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
So can you tell me your full name?
Yeah, it's Celine Leah Gerda Juliette Holly-Wahabold.
Okay.
And so it's a mix of German and Moroccan. And so if you can pronounce one half, you can't pronounce the other half.
Professionally, she just goes by Celine Halua.
So, I mean, I guess for context, my parents had me really late. I was an accident and I'm the only child on both sides. So when I was born, I was like the miracle child that nobody ever thought was gonna happen. And I was born in America, the first American citizen, and da-da-da-da-da. So everybody wanted to have their name in my name, so I have 6 names. And every one of my IDs and government forms of identification have a different version of those 6 names.
Halua grew up in Austin, Texas, in a family that embodied the city's unofficial Keep Austin Weird slogan. Her mom loved animals.
So she'd always find these like poor little animals on the side of the road and rescue them and take them home. So I grew up taking care of like baby raccoons that we would find, turtles, opossums. We had built a bird cage in the back. I grew up with horses. I had like 18 cats growing up. We had 2 dogs. So there's an amazing photo of me in a crib in our backyard in Texas. And it's me asleep. And then there's like 10 cats all over the yard, perched on the crib, perched on me, you know, sunbathing, and then a dog sitting at the foot looking at me. And I just feel like that really explains well, like kind of what my childhood was like.
Being surrounded by so much animal life also meant being surrounded by death. And each time an animal died, Halua felt powerless.
Yeah, the first pet that I remember dying actually is my hamster, Hammy. I couldn't fix Hammy being dead or, you know, my first horse passing away or any of these things. And just, yeah, that feels like that. It's hard to explain. That feeling just frustrates me.
Maybe it was the animal deaths that made Halua more aware of her own mortality than other kids. Or maybe it was the fact that she grew up with a troubling cardiac arrhythmia. Whatever it was, she became increasingly interested in aging and how to stop it. Fast forward a few years. Halua has a degree in neuroscience and flies to England to do a PhD at Oxford. But before she starts her studies, she reaches out to Laura Deming, the pre-teen scientist who'd grown up to become a rainmaker for funding early-stage aging companies.
So I sent her a cold email, asked if I could come spend, you know, a week with her in San Francisco, flew all the way over.
Emailing someone you don't know about visiting them at their work on another continent? Sound familiar? It was the same tactic Deming herself had used at 11 years old to land a job in the lab of her scientist hero, Cynthia Kenyon. Deming offered Halua a short internship.
And at the end of the internship, she gave me a full-time job offer and 3 days to say yes or no. So I flew all the way back to Oxford, the entire time sitting in the tiny economy class bathroom, sobbing, because I was trying to decide whether I wanted to stay at Oxford or go work for Laura. But obviously I decided to work for Laura.
Celine Halua would become Laura Deming's second in command. One of her many jobs was to meet with researchers, assessing potential investment opportunities. Meanwhile, Halua was also noodling a business idea of her own, an unconventional one, dog longevity.
We've shown lifespan extension in mice so many times, just so many times. And scientists care, but nobody else really cares. And it's because it's not tangible. And so the kind of idea is that you can take, you know, your best friend and, you know, with a drug or a product, make them live a longer, healthier life, at least a healthier life. That would be an incredibly valuable thing to, you know, give somebody in their family, to give them more time with their best friend.
I'm Keith MacArthur, and this is Unlocking the Fountain, a podcast about the mysteries of aging and the scientific quest to slow, stop, or reverse it. Scientists know several ways to make animals live longer, but so far they haven't really shown they can do this for you and me. So now some researchers are focusing on our canine companions. And not just because age-related medicine could provide a measurable joy for millions of dog owners, but also because bringing a drug proven to add years to dog lives could attract new scientists and investors to human longevity research. And maybe speed up the process for developing drugs that could add healthy years to our lives.
But what's the kitten got to do with your experiment?
The kitten had a birthday last week. It was 5 years old.
What'll happen to it?
Will it go on forever?
Almost surely heart failure. But only after 60 years of glorious youth. That's 200 for a human being.
This is episode 7. Dog years. There are several reasons why dogs are so compelling for aging research. First, you can prove an effect on longevity much quicker on an animal that lives 10 to 20 years than on people who live many decades longer. Second, almost all of the longevity tests that have been done on animals so far have taken place in labs. Dog trials can take place in homes, in less controlled domestic environments, more similar to the human experience. Third, getting regulatory approval for a doggy drug is easier than for a people drug, though the process still takes years. And one other thing, people really, really care about their dogs.
Oh, he's sniffing the mic.
My son Connor, he's 17. And our golden doodle Quincy, 4. Can you show me some tricks?
Quincy, sit. Can you sit? No? Okay. Hey, buddy, sit. Oh, there we go. That's a good sit. Down. Okay, so instead of going down, he did a stretch. And now he's down. Good boy. And that's all we have.
Tell me about Quincy.
Quincy is very good, I would say. You know, he's very, very loving, very, you know, warm, very snuggly.
So I'm doing this episode on, like, because the whole series is about people aging.
Dog mortality.
Dog
right?
mortality, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about that? Like, obviously dogs live a much shorter time than we do.
Sure, yeah, I'll cover his ears. It's weird, because sometimes I'm, like, petting him, and I get kind of freaked out by that. Like, he will probably be around, like, only be around for, like, a short portion of my life, right?
And does that make you sad?
Yeah.
If there were a pill, say, that he could take that would make him live, help him to live a couple extra years, would you want him to take that?
Yeah, I would. It's a few more years that he can live and sort of experience the world. And that would be nice. It's a few more years that we can live and sort of have him here because he's a really good boy.
We'll come back to dogs and Celine Halua. But first, there are some crazy facts about animal aging that we've got to talk about. And nobody knows more about this than Steve Austad, who we met way back in the first episode. He's the zoologist who's betting that someone already in their 20s will live to 150. Austad sort of stumbled into aging research.
So I was an English major, and my idea was that I wanted to write the great American novel. So after I got my degree, I set out to gain the experiences that I assumed that one needed to write the great American novel, because I come from a very, you know, working class, regular background. I didn't think there was anything at all interesting about it. So I spent some years hitchhiking around the U.S., picking up odd jobs. I was a taxi driver. I was a pool hustler. I worked as a messenger in New York City. I was a newspaper reporter. And then I fell into, by accident, I fell into this animal training gig for the movies in Hollywood.
Ostad handled a bear in a Paul Newman movie.
A bear that eats glue. So civilized.
And an elephant in an episode of The Bionic Woman.
My God, Jamie, your foot. Tusker, back out. Do you know how much weight he had on it?
He was also the Bionic Woman's foot double in that one.
And that really awakened an interest in me in science that had been latent since I was in high school. When I was in high school, I remember my biology teacher saying, "You're going to be a biologist." Mm. And I thought that was the most ridiculous thing I had ever heard. But once I started working around the lions day in and day out, month after month after month, it was true. I'm just fascinated by what makes animals tick. And I thought, if I'm not going to do this the rest of my life, maybe I could do this more in a more formal way by getting a PhD in animal behavior and then studying it and scientifically.
One of Ostad's early research projects involved field research with possums.
We had to recapture the same animals every month. Mm. And as I did that, I realized how quickly they would change. They'd be in the prime of life, and 2 months later I'd get them and they would have cataracts and their muscles would have shrunk and they may have had parasites. And by the time that I published the work on the opossums that I had started off doing, I'd completely lost interest in that. I'd really changed my focus to aging.
And with opossums, what was it that you found interesting about the fact that they were aging so quickly?
Just the fact that they're as big as they are, and things that are that size don't age that quickly.
It defied a general rule of thumb, first observed by Aristotle over 2,000 years ago, that big animals live longer than small ones. African elephants live about 60 years. Kangaroos, about a decade. And ants, roughly 18 months.
But a house cat doesn't really start to get old until its teens, late teens, quite often. Whereas these things in 18 months would be falling apart like this. And I just couldn't imagine how or why that might be happening. It's still a mystery to me.
Possums are a scientific outlier because they age so quickly. Ostad has also studied animals on the other extreme. Clams that are still reproducing at 500 years of age. Naked mole rats that don't appear to age at all for the first 2 decades of their lives and can live another 10 years after that.
I've actually seen an elderly naked mole rat, which is even more spectacularly ugly than a younger naked mole rat, if you can believe that.
I think they're cute, but whatever. And then there are hydras.
A strange terror strikes.
The hydra!
Not the multi-headed snake monsters from Greek mythology.
If they cut off one head, two more shall take its place.
Not the bad guys from the Marvel movies, but a 1-inch-long aquatic animal. It doesn't have a brain or muscles or a respiratory system. But when it comes to living long, this animal is the best in the world.
And a hydra is a little small freshwater organism that looks kind of like a sea anemone. And as far as anybody knows, those things don't age, at least in the laboratory.
This doesn't mean hydra are immortal. Sometimes they get eaten by a fish. Sometimes they catch deadly diseases and die of those. But the odds of those things happening in any given year don't go up, no matter how many years a hydra lives. While humans, and pretty much every other creature, become weaker and more likely to get sick when they get older, a hydra is no more likely to succumb to death in its 1,000th year than its first.
That is, if you follow them, they will die, but it's pretty rare and it takes a long time. But the thing is,
one study estimated that in a controlled lab setting, about 5% of hydra would still be alive after 1,400 years. What gives Hydra these superpowers? We've talked a few times about the Hayflick limit, how human cells can only divide 40 or 50 times before they die. But Hydra cells? They don't care about the Hayflick limit. Their cells can divide indefinitely.
So those cells, for some reason, have discovered a way not to wear out. They can just keep cranking out new cells year after year, decade after decade. I think what we might be able to discover from the Hydra is how do they keep from wearing out?
Scientists are still trying to figure that out. Because if they can, it could be another clue for how to extend lifespan in people. And dogs.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart McLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share 2 hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Aristotle's notion that big animals live longer than small ones? It's often true, but there are plenty of exceptions, including when it comes to domestic dogs. And that was the insight at the heart of Celine Halua's big idea to extend canine lifespan.
Big dogs have about half the lifespan of a small dog. So a Great Dane, purebred, on average, will live somewhere between, 6 to 8 years, maybe 9 years, while a Chihuahua has an average lifespan closer to 15 or 16 years, or maybe longer. And it's really weird for context that within the same species, you see a 2x lifespan differential. I don't think you do see that in any other species. And the reason why is because we inbred dogs so much after we domesticated them to, have fluffy dogs for this, or, herding dogs and work dogs. But the way people did that is by breeding dogs that look similarly together and often were in the same litters together, and it just causes all these genetic issues. And that's why, German Shepherds have hip dysplasia, so their hips fall out a lot. Flat-faced breeds have a hard time breathing. Many different breeds of dogs throw tumors. And the thesis is that another genetic issue that we accidentally introduced is making big dogs have an accelerated aging profile.
Most dog breeds were created over the last 200 years. But there's evidence that people have been selectively breeding dogs for millennia. Get this. A recent archaeological discovery in the Siberian Arctic found 9,000-year-old skeletons of 2 different breeds of domesticated dogs. The biggest dogs had been mated with other big dogs to help with hunting. Smaller dogs had been bred to pull sleds. And 9,000 years of breeding has resulted in this strange situation where small dogs live twice as long as big ones. But why? Well, back in the 90s, Cynthia Kenyon manipulated a single gene to double the lifespan of tiny transparent worms. She was suppressing a hormone known as IGF-1, which plays a role in both growth and aging. Dogs also have IGF-1. And it turns out that when you breed the biggest dogs with other big dogs, you're creating puppies with higher levels of IGF-1. And that means they grow bigger and age faster.
The bigger a dog gets, the higher the levels this dog has of IGF-1 circulating in its blood, and also the shorter average lifespan that a dog has. So it's a very strong correlation on both ends.
Okay.
So it seems like we basically accidentally created, on the little dog side, an equivalent to what Cynthia Kenyon created with worms that lived 200% longer. And on the other end, made big dogs be the opposite, which you've also seen in my...
Halua's initial interest was in whether targeting IGF-1 could prolong human lifespan. But since that would take decades to prove, she decided to start with dogs. Privately, she worried this idea was a little too cute, that her colleagues might not see it as serious science.
So for a really long time, I was actually really embarrassed of the idea. Because it just sounded kind of, I don't know, I always had a picture in my head that I was going to develop aging drugs for humans, and that there's a very traditional path to do it, and you find an aging drug and you develop it for cancer or osteoarthritis or whatever, and I always kind of thought I was going to do that too. I remember for like 6 months, I was talking to people about this idea, and you know, people would ask me what I'm working on, and I'd be like, dog longevity, and be really quiet about it, basically.
But eventually, she had to bring the idea to her boss, Laura Deming.
And yeah, when I told her about it, she was actually skeptical at first. And most people are.
But Deming warmed to the idea of helping Halyuwa launch a company that focused on dog aging, while also testing a theory with potential human implications. She provided some startup capital, and Halyuwa started meeting with investors to raise more. The company launched under the brand name Loyal in early 2020. But it has some competition. In 2019, Aaron Hirshhorn, a former high school science teacher, went on Shark Tank to seek investors for Gallant, a stem cell bank for dogs.
Stem cells, not only because stem cells treat multiple disorders, from kidney disease to broken bones. In research animals, they've been shown to extend healthy life by as much as 30%. Imagine that. That's years more.
I really believe in this. I know quite a bit about it.
We've got a deal.
Done! Great!
Be excited! Yeah. Barely a year after securing investments from the sharks, Hirshhorn died in a surfing accident. He was just 42. The company he founded is still going strong, having expanded beyond household pets and opening a stem cell bank for horses. Another startup in the space, Rejuvenate Bio, was founded by celebrity geneticist George Church. Side note, my wife and I went to meet with Church at Harvard a couple of years ago. He helped us in our quest to find cures and therapies for our son Bryson's rare disease.
Is there an MRI or anything like that?
They have, so the brain is normal.
Yeah, that's what I would expect. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Very good news, I think. It's just probably quite reversible.
He's a fascinating guy, involved in dozens of futuristic science and medical projects, including one to bring the woolly mammoth back from extinction using gene editing on an elephant. Anyway, his aging company wants to use gene editing to target two age-related genes in dogs.
Promising. And if it works in dogs, we might try it in humans soon thereafter.
That's Church from a TEDx talk. Rejuvenate has already shown that boosting age-related genes can treat kidney disease and diabetes in mice. The most advanced therapy when it comes to dog longevity is one we've already talked about for people. Rapamycin. That's the promising anti-aging drug discovered in the soil of Easter Island.
My name is Matt Kaeberlein. I'm a professor of lab medicine and pathology at the University of Washington. I've been studying the biological mechanisms of aging since I was a graduate student. And I'm really...
Kaeberlein is head of something called the Dog Aging Project. And you're a dog person.
I am a dog person. Yeah, I've always had dogs. We had three until recently. We actually lost two of our dogs this year, so we're down to one.
Kaeberlein was one of the first researchers to make the connection between aging, rapamycin, and the mTOR protein.
You know, we and now many others have shown that in lots of different animals, if you provide rapamycin, you get lifespan extension. It really seems like rapamycin is improving function during old age in pretty much every organ and tissue where you look. The other thing that's been really exciting is the observation that you can actually start treatment with rapamycin in middle age and still get many of the same benefits that you get from starting at young age. And to me, that was a real paradigm shift in the field, because prior to that, everybody thought you had to start at very young age in order to get these big benefits.
So that sounds promising. But even if you start at middle age, it would still take decades to show that rapamycin is prolonging human life. In a small trial, Kaeberlein and his colleagues showed that feeding rapamycin to dogs for just 10 weeks improved heart health on an echocardiogram test. But a second trial didn't replicate those positive results.
It could be because we went to a lower dose. It could be because our sample size was small in the first trial. And so, you know, we're moving ahead with the what we call phase three. That's the real trial. That's the study that is designed to answer the question, does rapamycin slow aging in dogs? It's a three-year study, 500 dogs.
Caberline is expecting that the dogs on rapamycin could live a couple years longer.
That's the primary endpoint, and we'll be looking at multiple age-related diseases and heart function, cancer incidence, activity, cognitive function, all the things that, based on the mouse data, we think there's a pretty good chance that rapamycin could have an effect if it's going to have an effect in dogs.
And what about other pets?
I often get asked by cat people, you know, why are you doing this in dogs? Why are you not doing this in cats? And the one legitimate answer I can give them is, have you ever tried to get your cat to take a pill? It's just much easier to get dogs to take pills. So there's no reason to think that rapamycin won't work the same way in cats, but it is certainly, you know, as any dog owner will know, most dogs, if you put some cheese on it or peanut butter or something, they'll be happy to take the rapamycin pill.
If rapamycin works on dogs, you can bet there'll be a market for other pets too. Is the science of pet longevity ready to go mainstream? There are signs of that. Not only are rapamycin trials about to begin, but George Church's Rejuvenate raised $10 million in 2021 to test age-related gene therapy on dogs, and eventually people. And Halua and her team at Loyal have identified an existing drug they think could prolong the life of big dogs. They've already enrolled 500 dogs for preliminary research, and are hoping to start drug trials in 2022. Drugs for pets still need regulatory approval, but the process doesn't take as long as drugs for people. Not as many trials are required, and manufacturers don't need to prove that their drug is better than other drugs on the market, just that it works.
Generally speaking, it takes about 3 to 5 years to get a dog product to market.
Halua's not ready to talk about pricing for the drug just yet, but she says Loyal's goal is to ensure broad access. And the founder is no longer embarrassed about telling people she's in the business of helping dogs live longer. What's people's reaction?
Oh, they think it's hilarious. I remember after I raised my first round of funding, I'd be walking around San Francisco and people would recognize me as a dog lady. People had no idea who they were. And they're like, oh yeah, I heard about you. You're trying to make dogs live longer. I think people are excited about it. I think it's like inspiring in some ways. There's very few people who have a controversial take on whether we should have dogs live longer and healthier lives, right? Like we all, like dogs are kind of the best versions of, you know, what biology can produce.
A pet? Yeah, you want pets, don't you?
It's conceivable that by the end of this decade, every vet visit will include a consultation about proven drugs to extend your dog's lifespan by a couple of years. So we're still a long way off from having treatments that could allow dogs to live 25 or 30 years.
Yes, and I mean, yes, that's absolutely true. And I think that's also true that we're a long way off from having treatments that could allow humans to live, you know, 140, 150 years. That's sort of the same, you know, difference in percentage. So I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong.
And what if he is wrong? What if we are much closer to breakthroughs that would add decades to human life? How would that change the world? And why are some people so afraid of this? Next time on Unlocking the Fountain.
We might get a slower rate of change and innovation. We might have dictators who want to live forever. We might have altered relations with our own relatives.
If we want to extend life, what are our reasons and what are the trade-offs? And how can we consider the implications before we go down that route?
My worry is that it'll only exacerbate that divide between rich and poor and healthy and unhealthy people and successful aging and not so successful aging.
You're talking about a several-fold increase in the world's population. We're already dealing with climate change, even at our present population.
Unlocking the Fountain is hosted and written by me, Keith MacArthur. Our associate producers are Sarah Melton and Graham McDonald, who also does our sound design. Our digital producers are S.K. Robert and Emily Cannell. Chris Oak is our story editor. Additional audio from Paramount Pictures, Warner Brothers, Universal Television, DreamWorks, The Walt Disney Company, ABC, and the TED Foundation. Our senior producer is Tina Verma, and our executive producer is Arif Noorani.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.